Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. I'm running for mayor of New York City for a vaccine-free NYC because I believe that poison should be illegal. And if it's not already, certainly if I become mayor, that'll be the first item on the agenda. So I would like to introduce you again to Scott Tipps of the National Health Federation. I've had the privilege of interviewing him now three times, and Kat Carroll, also of the National Health Federation. Scott has written an article recently on the measles. He'd like to talk to you about measles, exemptions, and then we will move on to Codex Alimentarius, which is an issue he addresses constantly in his work. So let me pick him up right now. Welcome to Scott Tipps, I hope.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Sally.
Well, thank you for coming on. Let's get right down to business because we only have 45 minutes. So please tell us about what it is you wrote regarding measles. Very interested. All my listeners are very interested in issues regarding vaccination.
Well, Sally, it's really quite straightforward. In an article that I recently wrote, and it was published in our Health Freedom News magazine for the National Health Federation, and also in Whole Foods magazine nationwide as well, I wrote an article called Voodoo Vaccines, The Lie of Safe Vaccines Has Continued Far Too Long. And really the point is that this current nonsense and buzz about removing vaccine exemptions so that everyone will be vaccinated, especially kids, and protect them and keep them safe, is a bunch of nonsense. What we really need to be doing is taking care of the vaccines that are harming and killing off our young kids, infants, and even older children. And this is a real danger because by the time a child is 6 years old, he or she in America has probably had close to 44 vaccinations. That's a far cry from when you and I were younger, Sally. And I remember in my own case that I probably had four or five vaccines when I was growing up, certainly by that age, if I even had that many. And the autism rate, the deaths, the sudden infant death syndrome, all these other problems that we face today can be directly linked to the vaccines. Now, not entirely linked to them, and that's what makes it a little bit more puzzling, because it appears there's some environmental effects that interact with these that make people more susceptible, children more susceptible, especially in infants and babies, to the effects of the vaccines. But the point is that if we are exposed, and as we are, to contaminants and to toxins in the environment and in the foods we eat, then shouldn't we be more careful with the vaccines that are being administered to us really willy-nilly by the medical establishment when we really do not need, certainly kids do not need, all of these vaccines, and it's just causing a lot of harm, especially in the case of young boys, because their immune system, you know, boys take longer to mature than girls, and so you see this cropping up, these problems cropping up in boys more than girls, and that's because their immune systems are taking a longer time to develop.
Now you work internationally, but nationally, our own government refuses to address the connection between the MMR vaccine and autism. And Congressman has said that this would shut down the government to link vaccines to autism. So do you work within the United States itself or just in an international way?
Oh, no, we most definitely, the National Health Federation and I personally, we both work both domestically and internationally. You know, if any of your listeners, if you go to a chiropractor, you can thank the National Health Federation for that. If you use an acupuncturist, you can thank the NHF for that, too. In fact, if you take supplements, you can thank the NHF for that as well. Some other people as well,
well
in
I'm
that
not completely
instance.
Sure how why we should thank you for that, but I'll tell you right now, I don't know that any of those three things. No, and I want you to explain it. But nonetheless,
sure.
I don't know. I'm not sure that any of those three things are covered by health insurance, and they are health related. Are they covered by insurance? Is any one of those three covered by insurance?
Well, actually, they're starting to be. It depends upon the plan and the program, but they are starting to be. And this is a bit of my pet peeve as well, Sally, is that they should be covered. Any of these health modalities that can get people better should be covered by private health insurance, and anything that will lower health insurance costs should be. But the problem is we have such a top-down, and this is a whole different topic than I'd anticipated, but since we have a top-down, elitist-driven health insurance plan and program put in place by the federal government these days, you're going to see a lot of these alternative healthcare modalities further suppressed, because the feedback mechanism that allows health insurance companies to lower costs and the like, and to limit the benefits they have to pay out. You know, if you can keep people healthier, then it makes more sense to go with those modalities where you will keep people healthier. But the problem
is the insurance companies would be the first to be on board with this.
Yes,
you know, because
absolutely.
They have to pay out. And yet, even though the vaccines are hurting our children, I'm to understand that the doctors get a bigger payout from the insurance companies if they have a high rate of vaccination among their patients. So it just doesn't make sense to me. And when Rob Schneider was going to be the spokesperson for an insurance agency, they bowed to the pharmaceutical industry and pulled him. And he is very outspoken against vaccines. He should be the darling of the insurance industry.
But the government works, and I agree with everything you just said, the government, so my butt was not to detract from that, but the government works hand in glove with the pharmaceutical and the vaccine industry, and they see this as a way to, really, this is their plan. Now, whether you see it as having evil intent or just unintended consequences that end up being rather bad, it doesn't matter. The fact is the government is doing it. It's pushing it. It's all part of its agenda. And the pharmaceutical and the vaccine industry has the government in hand with this, with promised jobs after they leave government, the personnel there, with all sorts of goodies that go their way. I mean, that's why the industry spends $6 million a day lobbying the halls of Congress and the FDA and other alphabet agencies that might affect them in pushing their agenda. And we don't have that kind of money, certainly not at NHF. We don't spend $6 million a day on a lobbyist, that's for sure. But the point is that this is all part of what they do, and the anything that strikes against it in any way, anything that militates against it, is the enemy. And they will act against us. They will act in terms of threatening doctors who speak up against the vaccines and their dangers. They will threaten their licenses, and then they will mock and minimize all of us, you, me, the rest of us, who try to point out the dangers in vaccines. Vaccines are
right, and people genuinely fear ridicule. So it's a very powerful tool that they use, but we have to be very forthcoming in terms of the fact that ridicule is at the forefront of their pushback to us who are rejecting their poison. Now, poison is obviously an immense problem, not just in vaccines, but in GMOs and in the chemtrails and the fluoridation of our water supply. And you work internationally to set standards or to monitor and standards in this regard. Would you like to tell us a little bit about the different ways in which you work and your recent successes or perhaps setbacks?
Sure, I'd be happy to. One of the things that we do, as you know, Sally, is we attend these Codex Alimentarius meetings and have been for really since about 1997, first reporting
and
on the events.
Who is at these meetings so that we know who you are attending in concert with?
Sure. Well, the National Health Federation attends as a Codex-accredited INGO, International Non-Governmental Organization. So what you find are really three main types of people at these meetings: the staff for Codex, the governmental bureaucrats like FDA-type and USDA-type bureaucrats who attend on behalf of their respective countries, and then the INGOs like, well, I hate to say like NHF, because most of them are trade groups, you know, like the Calorie Control Council, which is Monsanto, aspartame people. CropLife sounds great, doesn't it? But it's a front group for Monsanto and GMO farming and crops. And the International Dairy Federation, which actually isn't too bad an outfit. They side with us a lot. And then there are about five consumer groups, of which we, the National Health Federation, are the only health freedom group there. So these other consumer groups and NHF work together on certain issues, but unfortunately the other consumer groups are very ignorant about the benefits of dietary supplements, and they work against us in the nutrition committee on that subject.
Now, I know that you have had successes in terms of aluminum, reducing the amount of aluminum put in, for example, baby food. Am I correct?
Well, putting it in baby food, true, but really across the board in food additives. So we had that success a couple of years ago. But our more recent success has been at the Bali meeting, the Nutrition Committee meeting met last November, Thanksgiving week in Bali, Indonesia. And I flew there and dealt with that. And we, NHF, was successful in a five-year-long campaign to keep them from reducing the daily allowance for vitamin C from 60 milligrams down to 45 milligrams. We actually caused it to be increased by 220%, which admittedly only takes it up to 100 milligrams. But when you consider that they were looking to reduce it down to 45 milligrams, and we were able to turn that energy around and move it in a positive direction upwards, is fairly phenomenal. And it got people looking at supplements and or vitamins and minerals in particular and saying, well, maybe we should have them be at higher amounts. And that's where we're at now. And we have an upcoming meeting next November in Germany, and we will be arguing some of the nutrient reference values or daily allowances for like magnesium, for vitamin D, for vitamin A, for chromium and those sort of nutrients. And so we hope to have another victory to report after the next meeting.
Now, I am going to post in the comment area, and I hope you will too, Scott Tips, after the show is over, links that pertain to everything we're discussing. But one of the things I'm going to post is the excipients in vaccines so that you get to read each vaccine and what it contains. A legislator currently in office as an assembly person in New York State, Abinante, had proposed a bill, which he has since withdrawn, most unfortunately, to ban vaccines that contained GMOs, which I think very possibly could have been all vaccines. I was very excited and wished to promote this, but by the time I found out about it, it had already been withdrawn. So my question to you is, working to ban vaccines that contained GMOs, I'm basically asking you to define what a GMO is.
Well, GMO in its broadest sense is just basically any sort of material that has been genetically modified, whether it be plant, animal, or any combination of the above, as it turns out has been happening. And these are used and injected into the environment, either in plant form, in animal form, in food form. But the way that we most see it, most commonly, is in crop form, in seed and crops. And these are genetically modified plants, usually given a gene that makes them resistant to the herbicide Roundup, and allows the plant to be sprayed quite liberally with this herbicide so that it'll kill off all the other surrounding plants and animal and insect life as well that comes into contact with it, but they don't talk much about it. And in this sense, these are the most common forms, but it also extends to fish life with the so-called frankenfish, the salmon that is to be genetically modified to produce more meat. So there can be more profitability from these animals and the like. But the problem with all of this is that the scientists are not secure enough in their knowledge, certainly not from our standpoint, to know what the long-range consequences of these will be. I mean, there's a more immediate problem, and that is you can see the harm that's being done immediately to our planet through this and to our own health through these products that are destroying intestinal bacteria, that are contributing to honeybee die-off and the like. But genetically modified plants and materials per se are not, and you may shriek when I say this, Sally, but I mean, just per se are not inherently bad. It's just the way it's being done without controls, you know, without adequate introduction into the environment if they were to do it. And I don't mean these kind of Franken plants that are being done. That's not what I'm talking about. But if you took just two simple things that you might, through hybrid means, put together and generate, then we've been doing that for millennia, but the way they're doing it now, it is just reckless, and it is irresponsible, and it is not being done in a proper way, and it's causing great harm to the planet through what they're doing, and it needs to be stopped, and it needs to be stopped soon.
Now, in terms of Roundup, I have heard that there is Agent Orange in Roundup. I have also heard that glyphosate is in Roundup. I know both of these are detrimental. Are they the same? Is the glyphosate Agent Orange? And if not, what do each of them, how do they affect the body?
Well, that's a tall order of question, and I might refer you to our good friend Howard Flieger for the answer to some of that. But you know, glyphosate is really the active chemical ingredient in Roundup. So it's not synonymous. It's just a subset of Roundup itself. And glyphosate, you know, these herbicides are probably the most widely used in the world, I would say. So they're used quite a bit. And if a plant is called Roundup Ready, then that basically means it's tolerant of these high doses of glyphosate that are sprayed on the plant. And in this sense, even though glyphosate's patented as an antibiotic, it only takes about one part per million to kill beneficial organisms. That's the real danger with glyphosate. It also will kill when you eat the products that have been sprayed with and you have a residue on, or it's inherent in the product itself because it's GM, then you stand an extremely high risk of destroying your intestinal flora. And that is where it can really hurt people. It also will cause infertility. You know, it kills sperm and egg at very low levels, and it's an endocrine disruptor. And this is the real danger from a lot of this stuff, from the GM crops, from the GM chemicals,
from
glyphosate.
It's a what disruptor? It's a what disruptor?
It's a, I'm sorry, endocrine disruptor.
Okay,
this is
you.
The real danger to humanity now, because it disrupts our endocrine system and basically turns boys into girls and girls into boys. I don't mean literally, but swings them more in that direction, because These, most of these chemicals are very weak xenoestrogens, but when I say weak, it doesn't mean that they get a pass. It means that they aren't as strong as real estrogen, but they still occupy the same receptor sites, and they will cause a decline in testosterone in males, and they will cause all sorts of masculinizing tendencies in females. So you have some real problems here with this and the future of humanity, because the fertility rates are dropping, and in large, large part, it's due to these kind of glyphosate endocrine system disruptors. And this is a huge risk for humanity. Now, maybe this is part of the plan. You dumb down the nutrition so that there's fewer defenses, you know, you have a less of a nutrient-rich diet. And at the same time, Sally, you're increasing the toxic load on the system so that fertility rates are reduced. They aren't meant to kill us off, just to make us less fertile. And in fact, that's what you see pretty much across the planet on most of a scale, the fertility rate dropping pretty dramatically, and below replacement levels in many cases. And glyphosate
well,
is
I always
hard
tell
to
people
leave.
If they don't understand that poison kills, perhaps you'll, in terms of depopulation, perhaps you'll understand that it causes infertility, and that will bring home the depopulation, because we are most assuredly going to be our population is going to be diminished significantly. I'm, you know, praying that my children, since I didn't find out about the components in vaccines, nor the GMOs in the food we eat, until they were, you know, 18, I'm wondering, you know, I'm praying that they can have children, but quite frankly, not in this environment. I would not wish them to in this environment. We have a lot of work to do to get rid of all these toxins. Now, that's another issue. Toxins, they, I understand, have recategorized nutrients. Have you heard that?
I know they look at nutrients from a toxicological model. I see this all the time, both in Washington, D.C. and at the Codex meetings. I haven't heard of them specifically reclassifying them as that, but, you know, I'm not omniscient.
Vitamins
omnipotent.
Or minerals?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I only read it once, and I thought, oh, Lord. We're playing opposite day, where we take things that are good for us, and we classify them so that they will be misinterpreted as bad for us.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem with this toxicological approach to dietary supplements, or to vitamins and minerals in general, however they're consumed, because we're talking about something that is just not, that has not been put into a, you know, it hasn't been tested, but the fact is that it is a substance, these are substances that we've consumed for millennia, and the death rate, the safety record, let me put it that positive way, the safety record for vitamin minerals, especially supplements, is enormous. The last 35 years, there have been, according to U.S. government statistics, there have been no deaths, zero deaths from vitamin or mineral supplements. And so this is something that's lost in the side of applying all this toxicological approach, this drug-like approach, to substances that don't need that. And so
a lot of people in New York City, which is where I live, we do not have the property. Most people live in apartment buildings. So they don't have the wherewithal to start an organic garden in their home, although I've seen units where you can hang it on the wall.
Right.
Normally go to the local grocery store, and everything there. I have seen many lists of products, you know, manufacturers of products for our digestion, and there are so many of them that they say have GMOs in them. My question, I guess, is has the National Health Federation generated a list of products that would be readily accessible to people who get their food from the store? What, you know, what products we might look to be purchasing in lieu of the vast array of the ones we should not?
Well, we have not created such a list. It's a good idea. However, another organization has. They've created a list in, on the GMO products and GMO-free products, you know, the Institute for Responsible Technology, and they do a lot of good work in that field. We, unlike them, we spread ourselves across many different areas dealing with GMO, but also dealing with water fluoridation, vaccines, with codex, with domestic legislation that might impact our supplements and so on. So we cover a much broader range and can't do all that we would like to do. But it's actually a really good idea, Sally, what you suggest, because you're exactly right. There are people like that who are, many of us, who are in apartments and don't have gardens, and we have to rely on kind of the veracity of certain people, certain other people, as to whether these products are good or not, and we need to know whether they're good or not. And this all goes into part of my, you know, typical speech about the flip side of freedom is responsibility. So one reason people are so afraid of freedom is, oh, my God, now I have to start thinking for myself. I have to make decisions. I've got to ask around. I can't just take an FDA label stamped on something and go, okay, it's good. Well, you know, the problem with that thinking is they never could do that. You know, an FDA stamp of approval on anything is probably more a reason to run screaming in the other direction instead of accepting it. But most people accept it, and this is part of all of this. That's why your listeners are so fantastic, because they don't need to be told this sort of thing. They know that they need to take responsibility for their own actions. They know they have to think things through. Now, sometimes they'll make mistakes. Of course, we all do. But at least they're thinking. At least they're asking and looking and not just unquestionably accepting what is given to them on a pewter platter. And this is important, but it is good to have sources of information that you can trust. And we do have some sources of information on alternative doctors lists, that sort of thing, and all our information on codex and vaccines, of course, and so on. And on Facebook, we have quite an extensive amount of information, as you know, on our Facebook page.
There's a really big question that ties into everything in terms of our health. Is the government allowed to lie to us? Is the FDA allowed to lie to the government? We know the CDC, actually they are referred to as the lying liars who lie. This is not acceptable. So my question is, what kind of recourse do we have? I have recently seen a Senate hearing questioning the CDC on vaccines, and this is in light of the CDC whistleblower coming out and saying, I will answer questions, being given whistleblower status, and then they're questioning a known liar, a woman who has pushed the H1N1 vaccine for pregnant women. And the whole thing that transpired looked like a very orchestrated festival of lies. What can we do? What kind of recourse do we have in light of this?
Well, as you know, Sally, I'm also an attorney, and actually, it's a good, excellent question, and one that people should do things about. Under the Data Quality Act, one can actually file a lawsuit against government officials, federal agents or officials who lie to you in a science-oriented way or data way. Let me explain it in a different way. This is a little-known executive law that requires that only information based on the best science be told to the public from a federal agency or official. So right now we have the Supreme Court saying that vaccines are unavoidably safe, which is true. And then you have the
you mean unavoidably unsafe.
Unavoidably unsafe. Thank you.
Yes.
Thinking ahead to what Barack Obama said, which is that they are safe. And we're talking specifically about the measles. But, you know, typically under the sovereignty clause, one does not have the right to sue the federal government or anyone in it unless they give you permission to sue them. But this is, you know, this is where you can invoke the Data Quality Act, and the process is, you know, pretty straightforward. A Data Quality Act complaint is written, and you send it to the offending party or agency, and the complaint, you know, holds nothing back. You say, like, on such and such a date, you said this information is mistaken for the following reasons, and you list all the reasons, and then you ask for a remedy. If that complaint is ignored or the typical garbage answer comes back, then the Data Quality Act says that the complainant can contact the Department of Justice and ask that they investigate it. Of course, they'll do no such thing. But then, after they don't do it, then the citizen can file a legal complaint in federal court against the respondent for the Data Quality Act violation. But of course,
so
probably the case
respondent,
won't be.
The respondent being both the FDA, for example, let's say it would be FDA, and the judicial system, it appears, if they also do not respond. Wow.
Right. Well, you don't sue the judicial system so much as you sue within the judicial system. Once you've gone through, jumped through the hoops, that will, of course, be, you know, you'll be thwarted in trying to jump through, you'll jump through the hoops, but you won't get any justice from it. And then the citizen invariably will have to file the lawsuit. But the main thing is, even if you don't win, it's an educational process for the general public as well. Here comes someone who is suing under the Data Quality Act in federal court against such and such an official for saying something that is mistaken science. So there is actually a remedy for lying. Whether it will result in anything concrete is another question, but at least one can try. And the more of these that are filed, who knows? One or two or three may very well prevail and be a victory.
Would it be a lawsuit against the individual who has lied, or a lawsuit against the agency they represent?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not really sure. I'd have to read the Data Quality Act again, but I would say it's probably both. It's certainly against the individual. There's also another type of action called the Title 42 action that I've used merely the threat of against government officials to get action. And this is something where if someone violates your civil rights, your constitutional rights, then under Title 42, you have the right to sue and go after that government official individually without getting government permission first, by the way. And then all of a sudden, these people's houses, their bank accounts, their cars, their boats, whatever they might assets they might own, are at risk. And you would be amazed at how polite they suddenly become. And I've used this. I remember driving across the Golden Gate Bridge once, and I was county of district attorney was trying to prosecute one of my clients for having a water tank in his yard, you know, and it was his property, all of that. And I just said, look, you know how litigious my clients are. Well, if you don't, go easy in this respect, they want me to file a Title 42 action against you individually, and we will not be in state court where you have friends. We will be in federal court. And the next day, the case was dropped against my clients. So I didn't actually have to file the Title 42 action, but that's another way to go. But that's only in the case of violation of civil rights or, you know, constitutional rights. Then you can go against the individual, and that's in federal court as well.
Well, we find time and again, especially in terms of vaccines, the lies just are incalculable. And the one issue which you are addressing in terms of codex, as well, the ingredients, the components, will not never be discussed. That is just off the table in terms of a discussion when it comes to vaccines, and it is the elephant in the room. It is the entire issue.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's so true. And it's something that comes up at Codex all the time, are the ingredients and the and really the amount of ignorance as to the dangers of these ingredients, or in the case of vitamins and minerals, the benefits to be gained, it's the ignorance is phenomenal. And you would think that this assembled crowd at Codex that's going to decide on these standards and these guidelines would know better, and in fact some do. And that's the funny thing at the Codex meeting. You have people who could care less, they're doing a 9-to-5 job, and then on the other hand you find in the most curious of places individuals who are really interested in doing the right thing in health and nutrition. So in that respect, Codex is not monolithic. You know, it's not some monolithically evil organization. I mean, even some of the staff at Codex is quite concerned about doing the right thing and having a healthy diet and so on. I even have had good discussions with the European Union delegates, and they've been our allies on certain issues, like getting aluminum out of food additives. They've been, you know, well, we led the charge first, but they certainly joined us in leading it a couple of years later, and we were successful in getting aluminum out of, got about half of the aluminum food additives deleted from the list, approval list, and the other half, they had the amounts of aluminum cut in half. So, and we're still working on that, but we've made some great inroads.
Well, the frustration that is real, really over, off the charts is, for example, fighting against aluminum in the Gardasil, fighting against the viruses in the Gardasil. And now they have, instead of 4 strains of viruses, 9. Instead, they have more than doubled the aluminum. So it's with every step we take forward, there are giant leaps backward for the people and their well-being. So this is where even HPV itself, as causing cervical cancer, has been, Sainvax has published a paper saying that it may not cause cervical cancer. So that would be, you know, this is between, lies are a large part of what the problem is. The fact that people are saying things with and having no, there's no recourse because they're a government agency. They're allowed to do this. And nobody thus far has been able to stop them from these blatant misrepresentations. So how do you, even if they were to debate, which they will not do, even if they were to debate, they would be debating from a place of untruth. So I'm very frustrated to see, especially with the Gardasil, which is already killing girls, for them.
Yes.
You know, countries have pulled this vaccine. 3 countries that I know of have pulled the vaccine, and here we are in America, more than doubling the aluminum and more than doubling the number of viruses that we're injecting. And, of course, the viruses are intended to give you the disease they claim to prevent. And not until the Gardasil have teenagers been getting HPV. Up until then, it was only middle-aged women and above. So I don't really even know what to say in terms of this startling.
It is frustrating, you know, isn't it?
Yes.
It's
beyond frustration. Your job must be very difficult, Scott. I really give you kudos to keep going keeping in the fight.
Well, thank you. But, you know, it is interesting that you say that, because when I'm at Codex meetings, I really think of all of you, you know, the listeners and others, and I realize I'm doing this for them, and it's not because I get well paid. I don't. I, you know, starting legal secretary makes more than I do, but I do it because I believe in it, because I believe we can make a difference, and in fact we have at Codex and at other levels, and there are many, many things we've done that will probably never see the light of day, but that have helped preserve our health or our health freedom at some level, and that's why we've been around for 60 years. You know, the NHF is 60 years old this year, and hope to be around for another 60 or so years. Unless we're able to establish health freedom, then there will be no need for us, which would be great. Then we can go about doing regular jobs and work. But it is frustrating because a lot of times the frustration comes from the ignorance that's out there or the malevolence that's out there from people whom you deal with. You know, at these codex meetings, I eat alone a lot of times because many times these people don't like us at Codex, and especially the trade organizations or some of the government bureaucrats whom I've argued with. And in fact, one delegate to Codex once said to us, said, people here hate you. And when we asked him why, he said, well, it's because every time you open your mouth, you cost them money. And they don't like that. So I took it as a compliment.
Well, the people who are sick from all of this poison, the only thing that's going to help them is not covered by insurance. So they are hung out to dry in their sickness and in the expense that it causes them. And I do not hesitate to say to the people who are making money and pushing this agenda forward, find a different job. Walk away. Mm-hmm. Do not be part of this. And right now, on April 8th, California is going to find out if they have lost their religious exemption to vaccines or whatever exemption they currently have. It may be the philosophical exemption. But if it will wind up being a mandate, and possibly from the wording of it, might include homeschoolers, which is the last bastion of freedom for people who do not want their children poisoned. So this is dire. California sets, you know, as goes California, so does the rest of the country. So this is all of our fight. And I'm asking everybody at this juncture, Scott, we don't have much time left, but I do want to say today is April 6th, April 8th, this will be decided, and I want everybody to go to Dr. Richard Pan, the legislator, chair of the health committee, who is promoting this dangerous legislation to deny people the right of choice in terms of vaccines, to air your grievances directly on his Facebook page. Almost every single person who has posted there, and they have posted industry documents. I've seen a roster of things that are generated that they have been, you know, gleaned from all the different agencies and all the different trade, medical trade magazines, etc. Even those people, especially those people, have been blocked from his page. So the rest of us have to step up in their absence. So I will leave it there. Dr. Richard Penn on Facebook.
Well, may I just add, Sally, real quickly to have them go to our NHF page and sign the petition for California as well, www.thenhf.com. We have a petition here. It's going to be hand-delivered by tomorrow, so sign it either today or tomorrow morning.
Oh, thank you, Scott.
And it will go there. It's on our homepage.
It's directly under the screen. Everybody open this link to this interview and look directly under the screen, and you'll see Scott Tipp's petition from the National Health Federation to Dr. Richard Pan. Is that correct?
Well, it's not to him. It's to the governor and to the state senators, as I recall. But it does include Dr. Pan. But I love your idea as well. Just do both. You know, go and sign our petition, and then go, as you directed, on the Facebook page of Dr. Pan and make your comments known to him. He's pretty dye-in-the-wool, though. He and Ben Allen are the two ones who brought this legislation forward. And this guy has had it out with knives very well sharpened for years against the vaccine exemption. We don't have the time for me to go into it, but he won't be moved by it, but at least he'll let the people who are reading it know that there's another point of view, and that's why I endorse what you suggested people do, Sally. I think that's a great idea. But please also sign our petition so we'll have more names on it to go to the governor's office and before the state Senate by before the 8th.
Thank you very much, Scott Tipps of the National Health Federation, for coming on the Public Advocate today.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.